Hello, everybody, and welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Hi, Sarah.
Hello there.
And hello, Chris.
Not feeling well, Marcus.
Well, that's interesting. From time to time, we all need to visit some form of medical or health professional. Some people are troopers, of course, who need to be told to take time off work and to have a rest, whereas others can be a little bit more dramatic and demanding. Today, we're asking this question, are you a good patient?
So it's interesting. I don't think I actually get ill very often. I am quite maybe lucky. I don't know. Maybe I've just got great hygiene standards. I'm not sure. I don't get ill very often, but when I do, I think I get really ill. So I don't I think I'm quite a good patient. I think I take the advice I'm given. I don't think I complain too much. The only thing is, I don't know about if either of you guys get these. I get migraines.
Yeah.
I get them where my vision goes. So it's almost as if like I'm looking through like broken glass.
Oh,
can't see anything. Can't read, can't type, can't do anything. And all you can do at that point is I've got medication that I can take. Take that and get your head down and go to bed. And there's just nothing else you can do. And when that kicks in, I do turn into almost like a child. And I'm just like helpless. And like I sometimes get quite upset because I don't like that it makes my like that. Like one time I was walking home from the pub with a partner and it kicked in, and I don't think he'd ever seen me like that before, and he's brilliant when I'm ill. And he was just like, what do you need, what can I do? And I was just like, I just need to get home. I just have to go home.
It suddenly comes on, it just like attacks you like a thief in the night.
Do you know what triggers it?
I think I figured out what triggers it. And it's not, you know, most people it's kind of caffeine or alcohol or stress or things like that.
For you, is it 8 points?
I was going to say, she's ruled them out, even though it could be the cause.
Weirdly, I just couldn't see after I'd done 17 Sambuca shots, so who knew? No, I think mine is actually if I've been stressed and then the stress stops.
Got you. Oh, really?
It's like
after.
Relief, yeah. It's obviously quite frustrating.
So you've always got... So if you feel yourself de-stressing, then, I don't know, we need to sort of do something. We need to kind of threaten your life in some way.
Just don't relax. Keep going. Yeah. Keep the adrenaline up. Keep the blood pressure high.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, so you've talked about being ill or having a migraine, which obviously not very nice things. But of course, a good or bad patient, you can be a good or bad patient if you go to the dentist as well, or perhaps see the physio. The chiropodist, you know, whatever one may need. Chris, are you a good patient or you're a dreadful patient?
I want to be left alone. I'm just like, I think it's a bit of self-pity. It's probably thrown in with a bit of guilt. I don't want to be a burden. And you mentioned earlier, Sarah, like, you know, you don't complain. And I think that was definitely a virtue in my family. Don't complain. Just get on with it. Keep your head down. I think I am a good patient because I just want to be left alone. I'm not demanding. I did a bit of Googling before, as one should.
Ooh.
And apparently, when we have a cold specifically, we have a protein that's released to help fight that. I can't say it properly. I think it's cytokine. And that basically has the side effect of feeling depressed. So often when we have colds, it's a neurological, biological response to fighting the cold, to feel emotions of depression. We want to be on our own. For me, it manifests in, I just want to eat junk food. I just want to, I just want to kind of nestle it in a duvet on the sofa and just basically as I would be when I've had periods of feeling extremely low or depressed type thing. Like, it's the same sort of response. So I think I'm a good patient, but I'm probably not if you ask people around me, because I'm probably just miserable and trying to recover.
What if you go to the dentist? How are you there?
Oh, I have a terrible gag reflex. I'm awful. So I was doing a COVID test the other day. I was doing a COVID test, and because I've got this cold, and I thought, well, I better check. And you know, you have to put it into the back of your throat.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the,
yeah.
The thing hadn't even entered my mouth, and I was retching
yeah.
because of the thought of it. So let alone a dentist actually going in there and doing stuff the whole time, I can't cope. So I'm probably awful. But, you know, anyway, yeah. Terrible, terrible patient at the dentist anyway.
I've got a similar one with, but it's at the optician. So I've had all kinds of problems with my eyes, and I've got kind of eye disease run through my family, so I've got to be quite careful and get them looked at quite regularly. And there was one thing where they needed to put these drops in my eyes, and I've got such sensitive eyes, I can't, like, I used to try and wear contact lenses, I could never do it. And this optician was like, right, it'll be over in a second, just hold still. He was lovely, really kind and everything. And I just physically could
punched
not
him in the face.
Stop myself. Well, I was like in the chair. I was like cringing away from him. I'm moving around in the chair. I can't control myself. And I'm like dodging away from him, trying to stop. And like, even though, like, you know, in your brain, you can be like, it's fine. It's just eye drops. Just sit still. It'll be over in a moment. My eyes were automatically shutting and I'm like squirming in the chair. And like, I think he had to come and get someone to like hold my hand or something while he was doing it, because it just couldn't, I just couldn't,
leather strap on your neck keeping you to the bed.
Yeah. Honestly, I needed it.
So yeah, so in that moment you could say you were maybe slightly high maintenance patient.
I was awful.
But
the thing is, like, I'm quite a people pleaser, and especially in the sort of figures of authority, like, you know, like, I like it when I go to the dentist. Oh, I went to my hygienist is so nice. And he said, oh, Sarah, they look wonderful. Oh, and I felt so good. I wanted a sticker. I wanted to like tell everyone, like, the hygienist said my mouth looks great. But so I love like doing what they tell me to do. But yeah, in that moment, in the optician, I was a total nightmare.
That guy sounds like Marge Simpson's art teacher in The Simpsons. Oh, Sarah, they look wonderful. Absolutely marvelous. Yes. You're the best hygienist I've ever. Terrible. I don't take praise very well. Yeah.
What about you, Marcus?
I have got a lot better. I don't, in terms of, I look at this as a case of you're going in to see a medical professional, whether it be physio, dentist, doctor, you know, nurse. Who does the injections? Nurses. Can nurses do injections? I don't know. Anyway, whoever it is. And I've never been bad, but I think I'm quite a chatty one. I'll be like, all right, so yeah, what do you do here? What does that thing do? And so on. I quite like, so some people, if they're quite chatty, absolutely love me. Whereas if others don't, I just go, okay, fine. You're not up for the chat then. You're quite busy and you just want to get on with it. I think I'm pretty good. I think the older you get, you go in, and if you go to the dentist and they go, okay, yeah, we're going to have to give you an injection into your gum. Nobody likes the sound of that, but I just sort of go, okay, if you've got to do it, you've got to do it. Do you know what I mean? I'm very much like, right, let's get it done then. No bother.
You trust their professional opinion. You're like, well, you've got to do it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm quite trusting. And I think that's probably what medical professionals want. The only time, I think, have I mentioned this before? I had gallstones. I'm quite confident I had gallstones because they weren't actually diagnosed. I'll tell you this, the worst pain I've ever had, absolutely awful. And it was quite, it reared its ugly head intermittently over about a 6-month period. And I eventually got an appointment with the, I want to say ultrasound, or is that pregnant lady stuff? But it might
be.
No,
they put the gel on your stomach and
yeah,
run
okay,
it over.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Traditionally
purely the domain
pregnant
of
women.
The pregnant.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I went to see the gynecologist and, went for an ultrasound. And they were looking, and so I couldn't eat for however many hours beforehand.
Ugh.
And they said, they were looking around and they went, oh, your gallbladder's a little bit constricted. And I was like, yes, yes, that's it. And they went, but no, it's nothing really. No, I was like, no, that was it. You were on it. You were on the money. Because I know this, because I've been thrown from pillar to post to each GP. Yeah. And I've done my own Googling, which can help. More on that in a sec. And that was it. But they, oh, okay. Anyway, get the results back, go into the hospital, and the doctor says to me, okay, yeah, so we got the results back. There's absolutely nothing wrong. And if you did have gallstones, because I kept going on about it, he said, well, you've probably passed them. And I went, okay. And I went to leave and I said, but I've had the pain since that result, which would suggest that there's you missed something there, pal. Mm. And
I'm assuming you'd know you'd pass them because it wouldn't be a comfortable process. It's not like, I missed that one.
No, I don't think it. It depends with the gallstones. Kidney stones, you bloody well know if you've passed them, whereas gallstones might be slightly different. Anyway, so I said, all right, because I've had the pain. And he sort of went, yeah, but the results say it's fine, so you're all right now.
So that's it.
And I sort of went, no, hang on a minute, I'm not having that. So I said, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I understand the results are clear, but I've had the pain since the results. So those results are dated, whatever, since I had it yesterday. So what's that? And I'm not joking. The doctor was quite clearly just trying to fob me off. He just went, yeah, sure, but I mean, the results say. And it got to the point where I said it quite forcibly a couple of times. It got to the point, I've never done this before or since, I actually put my hand on him and went, no, you're not getting me. The results were before that. Those results were before I had the pain again, right? And he eventually went, oh yeah, I don't know what that could be then. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay,
just
I don't
say that. Yeah, don't exactly. Fob me
just
off.
Just listen to what I'm saying.
I know you're busy. I know you're stretched.
But
computer says no is not an appropriate response to a man in pain. Yeah.
I appreciate, it was obviously a man. I appreciate that, you know, he can't go become the size of Tom Thumb and go into my body and have a look for himself. So I appreciate that, you know, there's stuff going in there that may not, but to just sort of fob me off. So I think, yeah, that was the only time that I had to use a tactic in which I was trying to sort of, what would it be, you know, be a bit more forcible with this chap. But
when
that
you
was
you put your hand on him, where
no,
did
I didn't
you put
like,
your
no, I didn't ran like, his throat? I didn't like cup his testes or something, you know. I just sort of I put my hand on his
jabbed
shoulder
him in the eye.
upper arm no yeah. one's getting in, no one's going to prison for touching yeah. someone on the upper arm. But it was a case of no, listen to me, sir, you're not but it was like a last resort sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know, that's all it was. It's the only, as I say,
you locked the door, you sat him in a chair.
Yeah,
start
yeah,
putting
yeah.
hands on him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he didn't look very hard, so I thought, no, that's fine. Sarah, you've got into an argument with a doctor before, though, haven't you?
Yeah, with a healthcare professional. Right. So I think I've talked about it before. I have had on and off over the years very, very bad acne, and there is this kind of very extreme drug that you can be prescribed, but you have to go to a dermatologist in a hospital and go through all this test to make sure you're okay to have it. Fine. But one of the things is you absolutely cannot get pregnant while you were on this, because it would just be extremely bad for everyone involved. So they say to you, right, if there's a chance you could get pregnant, you have to be on birth control, you know, the pill or something, and you have to take a monthly pregnancy test at the hospital. Now, at this time, I won't go into it, but basically it was not possible for me to get pregnant.
Yeah.
We would have had... there would have been an immaculate conception. It wasn't happening. And I said this and I was like, look, trust me.
Yeah. I'm 12.
There are more problems here than the fact that I'm pregnant. Like, trust me on this. And she was like, no, you still have to do both of these things.
Mm.
And I was like, all right, I'll like take the pill or whatever. Fine. But I don't need to have these tests. And she was like, no, you've got to. You've got to. And I was like... it's not possible. And so I go through this treatment. I think I was on it for about maybe 8 months. And at the very end, because all this I'd been seeing the nurse or the, you know, whoever. And then at the very end, I got to see the actual dermatologist, the head of all the thing. And she said to me, like, oh, why have you been having to take pregnancy tests?
Oh, no.
I was so furious. And also because, like, having to do that in a hospital is not especially nice.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel great. And I was just, you know, when you're like, you, Marcus, you go, I know I'm right. Like, I'm not saying I'm a medical professional, but I think I know how pregnancy happens.
Yeah. Were you still slightly relieved when the results came back negative?
Oh, yeah. I honestly weird think that it's like an inherent thing in women. Like, obviously, if you're, you know, if you don't want to be having a baby, even though you know it's impossible, you're still like, phew.
Well, I was the same.
Just in case.
When I was having loads of blood tests and all around that sort of gallstones thing, because people say, oh, it could be this, could be that. They had to do like a full MOT sort of thing, and there was no good reason for this for my money, but I had to do an HIV test. Mm. And again, yeah, as you say, Sarah, I know full well that there's no way that that possibly could have happened. But I just thought, okay, I mean, that was just a simple blood test, you know. But even when I got the results back, I was still slightly, I mean, still, there was like 5% of me on the way to the surgery when I said, I'm getting my results. Yeah. No, I'm sure. Yeah, fine, negative.
It's, it's like the going through the airport scanner, isn't it? It's like going through the airport scanner when it's like, I know I haven't accidentally packed any bombs in my bag, but I am glad that they didn't find any.
Yeah, completely.
Because of the, it's urban legends though, isn't it? Like, you know, yeah. I remember being a kid and people are like, oh, you know, get pregnant if you're in a jacuzzi and someone's done something in there, and all that sort of stuff. So you're like, well, I've been in a jacuzzi. In there.
Which jacuzzis do you use?
He
one's down in Devon.
Don't blame the good people of Devon.
Well, what that's the thing, is there's urgent urban legends around how you get stuff, you know, like pregnant or whatever, and you're always like, I hope I haven't contracted it that way. And it is all nonsense, but as you said, there's that little percentage of you that goes in there thinking, oh, I really hope I haven't got it. I hope I'm not that one person who got pregnant that way, or, you know, got a disease another way.
I don't want to be the person on the front page of, like, you know those magazines where it's like, yeah, like, I got pregnant by a ghost and that kind of stuff. Like, I don't want to be that person.
So you should stop reading the Daily Star, I think, Sarah. I think that's probably your problem. I found on the website scientificamerican.com. Don't know anything about that website, so if it's full of hogwash, then please forgive me. But they do
fact-checking.
Four ways to become a better patient. Number one was ask lots of questions. I think that's an obvious one. But some people don't. I think older generations, you know, doctors were like gods to them. You don't question the doctor. Whatever they say is gospel. So that would have certainly been something that people would have struggled with, certainly maybe of yesteryear, perhaps still do. And number two was get into a routine with your health habits. So whatever the sort, I suppose, the advice is, you know, again, do it. But number three was research on Google. And I agree with this, but do take that with a pinch of salt. I mean, in this country, we have the NHS website, which I think is pretty comprehensive with certain things. Again, you know,
and
it
trustworthy.
Is. I would think so, yeah. Again, it's human beings diagnosing certain things. So you might get slight different sort of advice or whatever if you were looking at health services in other countries, I would have thought. But I would have thought the themes and the general were fairly similar. But I think sometimes medical professionals, if there are any listening to this, will probably go, oh, bloody, I can't stand it when people go, I've been Googling this. I've got, you know, I've got a pain in my nose. Does that mean I've got whatever? And that must be quite frustrating. So research and Google, yeah, but hold it lightly, as we often say, because I'm sure that the medical professionals are a bit like, no, your leg's not going to drop off. Your calf is just a bit tight. You've been running a lot and not stretching. Do you know what I mean? Whatever it may be. And the last one is don't lie to the professionals. If someone says, have you been eating this, or have you been flossing, or whatever it may be, don't lie.
That's a classic one with dentists. Like, yeah. Find it funny when it's like, you know, people are always like, oh yeah, I flossed last night because I'm seeing the dentist in the morning. It's like,
they know.
I'm fairly sure they'll be able to tell if you haven't flossed for the last 6 months.
Well, I remember when we were, when did you ever do that when you went to university? You would go and see the nurse or the doctor or whoever the person was, probably a nurse, and they would give you that questionnaire of, you know, have you ever taken drugs? How much do you drink a week? You know, blah, blah, blah. Have you got any other underlying health conditions? Are you on any medicine? Whatever. But they would ask about the sort of drink and drug. And I remember like one or two guys going, told them I only drink like 5 pints a week. It's more like 25. And it's like, well done you. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is not an exam that you're going to get.
They're not going to tell your mum.
You're only stitching yourself up, you know.
Yeah.
You're brilliant. You've hoodwinked your own metaphysical, I don't know, whatever the word is, sort of your own anatomy and physiology or something like that, whatever. Absolute nonsense. I remember an interview to sort of change tracks. You're aware of the film star Jackie Chan?
Yes.
He never believed in sort of conventional medicines, going to the hospital and all that kind of stuff. So quite an incredible patient, I would say. All sorts of injuries. You can talk about this guy's injuries that he's had, you know, just broken ankles and broken bones and all this, because he would do his own stunts. But he was on a chat show years ago in this country, and he would say, oh, if I'd broke my bone, I would just sort of like, you know, do my own kind of DIY around it and sort of hold it in place or whatever. Or if I got a cut, I would hold the skin together to make sure it sort of sets. And I just thought that was absolutely fascinating. He was asked once, which of your injuries has been the most serious and had the greatest impact on your life? This is what you're dealing with. This is the kind of patient he is. The head injury I got in Yugoslavia in 1986. I was in a coma for 7 days and everyone thought I was dying. It made me understand that no matter whether I'm doing big stunts or small stunts, I need to be really careful. That was the takeaway. He was in a coma for 7 days. What do you reckon? Are you going to quit? Are you going to just do rom-coms? What are you? I just need to be a bit more careful, I think.
I guess for people like him as well. Yeah, for people like him, apart from things like being in a coma, but like broken bones and stuff like that, it would be a mind over matter thing, wouldn't it? It would be very much, do you know what? Pain, I'm going to beat you. You know, I'm not going to allow you to affect
me.
My wife was an incredible gymnast when she was younger. She almost made sort of the junior Olympic team at one point. And she told me that she used to do the splits between chairs as a kid and be there for ages.
Like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
But she was like, you learnt to say, my body, I'm in charge of my body. From a very young age, like, I am not allowing this pain to stop me do it. It's not that she has no pain threshold now, but she definitely is a trooper. Do you know what I mean? She's incredible. But it's that thing, I think, if you've trained for years, you know, your body into kind of physical submission, then your brain's also part of that as well. You're like, nah, I'm not feeling that pain. I'm winning this one. Apart from, obviously, if you're in a coma.
Yeah.
But there is, though, something to be said for sometimes people power through too much.
Yes.
You know, like I would say I'm at the kind of the low end of that spectrum where, you know, I grew up in a house where you do not take time off ill. You do not take sick days, you soldier on. And I now realize that's not always the right thing. But then you get people, you know, I've spoken to doctors who've said, as Marcus, I think you said earlier, older generations, you know, aren't always willing to say when something's wrong. And I've heard stories of like little old lady showing up at the GP surgery and they're in the middle of having a heart attack and they're saying, oh no, I don't want to cause a fuss. And, you know, and that kind of thing. So I think like that, yes, there's definitely, you know, sometimes mind over matter is good, and sometimes like your mind can't heal your broken leg or, you know, or whatever is wrong with you. So there's a time to put a brave face on and there's a time to actually go, nope, gonna speak to a professional, something's definitely not right here.
Well, the pain is the body's way of saying, oi, what are you doing?
Something's not quite right.
Marcus, didn't Stuart Pearce famously break his ankle and then carry on playing?
The greatest example of that, I mean, this is, we're sort of moving away from patience, I suppose, but there was the German goalkeeper for, I think, Manchester City, broke his neck in an FA Cup final, but he carried on. He played on.
And maybe the shot kicks in for that sort of short-term effect. But I think I hate going to the doctor, not because I'm worried. I just can't be bothered. To me, it's a complete waste of time. So, like, I turned my ankle about a month ago. I think I told you guys. Probably
an impatient patient.
Yeah, so I was trying to, I hate doing cardio, but I was trying to get fitter. So I was in my garage and I was doing tuck jumps. So I was jumping and trying to tuck my knees up into my chest. And there was a weight behind me and I landed on the weight and turned my ankle inwards. And it ballooned big time. Like, it was at least three times the size of the other ankle. Mm-hmm. And my wife heard me and she came in and I was just like, I felt sick on the floor. I was like, do not touch me. But the thing is, that's a month ago. My ankle is still big now and I still haven't been to the doctor because I'm like, well, I've Googled it. Chris. A sprained ankle apparently takes 6 weeks to heal. But there's not that much pain, but it is still quite big. But I'm just like, I will only go if I really have to go. I can't be bothered unless it's proper serious. And I think I probably didn't go to the doctor for a good 8 years at one point. Because I was like, if it's that bad, I'll just go to hospital. Which I think could be a mentality. Like, oh, if it just gets that bad, I'll just go to hospital.
You could have caught, like, often it's like, if you'd gone to the doctor in year one, and actually it turns out you've had this condition that you could have sorted out in year one, but it's got so much worse. Yeah. So, like, you know, my experience, as I mentioned before, about with acne, is I was told by, you know, the magazines you read and your friends and stuff at school, that all you need to do when you've got spots is just to, like, you know, use the clean and clear face wash. By the way, don't ever use clean and clear face wash. It's terrible. just wash your face properly. And, like, everyone gets some spots. But actually, like, I had serious acne and I still have scarring from it because I left it for a while. Wow. And I didn't want to go to the doctor because I felt like, oh, no, I'm just causing a fuss and it's it's only spots. And it's not only spots. Like, it affects your mental health and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm the voice for, like,
I know you totally should do. I acknowledge that I shouldn't be like that. But I'm the opposite of my wife. If she has anything, I'm like, you need to go to the doctors now. Why haven't you been to the doctors? But in my head, I'm just like, oh, I'll be fine. Like, yeah. But that's wrong. I bet that's not an illness. That was an injury. Like, the worst that could have happened is I fractured a bone and it will get sorted. It won't be a long term issue. I hope.
Well, I mentioned earlier the Scientific American's 4 ways to become a better patient. Innovativemedicine.com, they have the 5 things that make a good patient. First is trust. Do you have faith in the healing process? Second is commitment. Are you fully committed to participating in your journey of recovery? Third is reasonable expectations. Do you understand that healing and recovery doesn't happen overnight? Number 4 is have a beginner's mind. Do you see yourself as a student or a customer? You want to see yourself as a student. And 5, purpose. Are you internally driven to heal and recover? I mean, they are 5 of basically the same thing, but you get the picture, you know. But I wanted to finish with talking about one of the most incredible patients of all time, I would argue. In 2017, a man called James Morrison, or Jimmy Morrison, he was often referred to, died at the age of 75 and is thought to have spent the longest amount of time in a single hospital across the public health system in British history. 2017 he died, and he was still in hospital that time. He visited the hospital after a car crash, which left him with a broken leg and a broken nose, in 1962.
What?
He was in hospital for 54 years, and this is because he suffered a cardiac arrest on the operating table when he had his broken bones, and it left him in a vegetative state. And he just stayed in the ward, which was incredible. According to one national newspaper, he's moved to hospital, which one is it? NHS Lancashire, where he remained for what is described a potentially record-breaking 54 years.
That's quite sad, isn't it?
It is quite sad, and it's incredible as well.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that, of course, you go in with some broken bones and you end up in a vegetative state. But hearing some of the quotes or reading some of the quotes, it's slightly uplifting as well. Bearing in mind, you know, obviously what's happened is very, very sad. But his brother Carl said, over the years, we found a way to communicate with him. He was all there mentally, but couldn't communicate with us at all. He only ever learned how to say 3 words again, which were 3 of his loves: home, pub, and horses. And he said, we often took him on holidays in Britain, and the hospital knew how much he loved the pub, so we would even take him there now and again. And one of the senior nurses on the ward where he was said of Jimmy Morris, he said, he touched the lives of many. He was a good, confident, and a great character, and will be sorely missed by everyone. So when you hear that, bearing in mind the kind of the sadness and the awfulness of it all, nobody wants somebody to spend 54 years in hospital. But then you hear the affection, just to pluck a couple of quotes there and say, well, he'll be missed. And actually, you know, he kind of will be missed, and he was a great character and he touched the lives of many. You think, well, my goodness, you've got to say that his sort of legacy is turning that incredible negative into a bit of a positive, you know.
Mm.
But amazing, absolutely amazing. So there we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. Lovely old job. Thanks very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.